there. Welcome to the Visionary Practice Solutions podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Sarah, and I am here to talk all things private practice, helping you to build your vision of the private practice of your dreams. Welcome back to the podcast. And may I just say, I so appreciate all of those of you listening. Thank you for liking and sharing. And if you happen to know other doctors that you think this would be helpful for, please share the podcast. I'm excited to get to help people. One of the things we're going to talk about today that I think is really crucial, honestly, to running a successful practice is how to build good patient rapport. And this is something that, you know, as doctors, I don't think there's enough emphasis on in medical school. I think we get taught a lot about diagnosing. I think we get taught a lot about treating. We know how to get information when we don't have it. We don't really get a lot of experience in how to talk to people and how to relate to people. And the reason this is so important, I mean, not just in, you know, compliance in your treatment plan and helping patients get the outcomes that they want and deserve, but from a business standpoint, it's hugely important. You know, that this is how you create raving fans for you and for your practice. And that word of mouth referral system that patients can give a physician and a practice is invaluable. And this is how you create that. This is how you create that word of mouth referral system. So even if you think you're pretty good with patients, great. More power to you. Some of us are naturally good at it. Some of us not so much. And it's kind of a struggle. That's okay too. But there are some things that I think can be done to really just give us that little extra edge, right? Or maybe put you into a category of really much more respected doctors and wow, this doctor really listens to me and oh, this person's great. It's not even so much for patients about the treatment plan you give them. Like you might be giving them really, really terrible news, to be honest. Like, hey, there's not much, you know, you can do for somebody, but it's how you deliver that news that is going to make patients be able to relate to you, right? It makes you a relational person. So we're going to talk today about building that rapport. So I have this as like a 9-step program. It's not a 12-step program. It's a 9-step program. You get a few less. The first step is greet them with a smile. And I know that seems really obvious, but it makes a big difference, especially if you've just been, you know, highly annoyed by an insurance authorization request or something else going on. You know, that doesn't exactly put a happy face on us, but to be able to put that smile on, even when you're wearing a mask, I did learn this during COVID, it does make a difference. That smile comes through in your eyes. That's an incredibly important thing to do. It sets the tone for what that interaction is going to be. You're happy to see that they are there. Now, you understand that the patient obviously is not super happy that they're there because they wouldn't be there if they weren't in pain or having problems. But the fact that you are happy to see them does make a difference for the patient. So make sure you greet them with a smile. So on to step two. Step two is going to be that once the patient is comfortable, you need to sit down on something. Stool, chair, or otherwise, because it brings you eye level with the patient. This is important. You are already in a position in this relationship of authority. You already have the knowledge that they are seeking. Patients do respond better and feel that they were listened better to if the doctor actually sits down at their level as opposed to standing towering over them. Now, for women, this sometimes comes a little more naturally. I have other women physicians who are very against doing this because they feel that they're already not seen in the same way as their male colleague physicians. Just trust me, there are a lot of patients that would prefer female physicians because they feel a better relationship with them. So capitalize on that. And if you're a man, just have a seat. Everybody should just have a seat. I think it's a really good way to do it. Now, number three is some things to do while you are asking questions. And I'm talking about your typical HPI questions, right? We run through those at this point as if that is no big deal. But there's things that you want to do while you're asking those questions. You want to, one, listen. And show that by taking some time to make eye contact with them. Take some notes periodically, even if you're just writing one or two words down on your clipboard to show that you're actually really engaged and listening. I have actually had patients thank me in the middle of their visit for taking notes. I had no idea that was an issue. They said, nobody ever takes notes. They're not actually really listening. Okay, great. Well, I take notes so that I don't forget things, but sure, if it makes them feel better, great. So I think there's something to taking some notes, but mostly making sure that you are making that eye contact and really listening. Don't be trying to rush through your physical exam while they're talking. Spend a little bit of time at the beginning when they're first talking to you, not doing anything else. Just sit and listen. I think once you get to that place of you're starting to ask very specific questions because you're really kind of honing in on the diagnosis, that's when you can start doing your physical exam at the same time, you know, so that we're being efficient with our time. Now, number four is going to be, you know, add in a little bit of personal relational comments and a little bit of humor if you can. You know, it does help relax people. So it doesn't have to be anything big. You don't need to share your entire life story with patients. In fact, I would not recommend doing that. You are there for them. Most patients don't respond well to hearing all about the doctor's experience with this medication. But, you know, for example, if they say, "Ugh, I'm such a bad patient," like how many times a day do we hear that, really? My response is, nope, doctors make the worst patient. There's no judgment here, trust me. And it's implying that I understand where they're coming from, that I too am human, I too am a bad patient, and they feel a little more at ease continuing to open up and talk. So adding things in carefully that are, you know, a little humorous and a little relational, I think can really go a long way with establishing that, hey, I am a physician, but I am human too. And I'm here to treat you. Now, number five is going to be reiterating their pain points. So asking them questions such as, how much is this preventing you from doing X, Y, and Z or doing the things you want? You know, how much does this prevent you from being able to run around with your grandkids or, you know, whatever other things that they've given you clues on during their initial discussion with you, because remember, you were actually listening. Those are the things to really hone in on and ask them how much that's impacting their life. This is important for a few reasons. One is a patient compliance standpoint. If you're able to really get them thinking about how much this affects their life, they're going to be a lot more willing to be compliant with the treatment plan that you are bringing forward to them. And two, it shows that you are listening. You know, if they're able to really talk about how much this bothers them, it gives them more of a sense that this doctor's actually really hearing what I'm saying and they care about how this is impacting my life. They're not just in and out, wham, bam, 15 minutes is all you got. Give me one problem a visit. Like, you know, I understand that we're all under pressure to see patients as quickly and efficiently as we can, but there is no reason to have patients feel that that is what's happening, right? So this is a nice way to ensure that they are feeling that they are being heard. Number six is don't give your opinion on their diagnosis until after your physical exam is finished. You can give indications, you know, you can kind of chuckle to yourself, like, I think I know what's going on and things like that. Great. They are encouraged by that usually. But if you start talking about the diagnosis before you've actually touched the patient, that's actually a point of contention for most patients. They think that, well, how could they have known that was a diagnosis? They never even put their hands on me. They never even checked anything. And I will tell you, when I give second opinions for patients that have gone to see another physician, that is probably the biggest complaint is, well, I don't know how they could have thought it was this. They never even put their hands on me. They never even touched me. They didn't even listen to me. How did they know that was the diagnosis? And I'm not getting better. So the patient already is going to have doubts in their mind if you have not physically put your hands on them yet, that you know what you're talking about or that you're just making a guess. Then they're not going to follow that treatment plan because they don't trust that you actually knew the diagnosis. Then when they don't get results, it just reaffirms their concern that you didn't know what was going on. So make sure that you don't start discussing your diagnosis until after you've, you know, at least on your basic physical exam. Now, number 7 is probably the most important part, which is to make sure that you are explaining their condition in layman terms. This is something that I think should be obvious, but at the same time, I see it happen all the time. Physicians, we get trained in a very specific language. We are very used to typing things up a certain way and talking about them amongst physicians certain ways. But if you don't explain to your patients what's going on with them in terms that your completely non-medically educated mother, father, sibling, grandmother would understand, it's going to go right over their head. And again, patient compliance will be an issue if you do that. But being able to explain it in terms that they understand and give analogies that they're going to understand or give examples of things that they would understand goes a really long way for patients thinking just the world of you as a physician. And it's an easy thing to just knock it out of the park with patients on. So really make sure that you're practicing talking about your conditions in layman terms, even if that means you're practicing on your way to and from work. How am I going to explain plantar fasciitis to this patient? I practiced it a whole bunch, and now I can do it without really thinking about it. And we have excellent treatment rates because patients actually understand what we're talking about. So that's an important one to do. Number 8 is empowering the patient to make their own decision and make sure that they know that you are there as a team member and you're just there to give them all the options. So I usually will tell people, look, I'm here to give you all of your options for how we can treat this, and you get to tell me which way you want to go. And then I give kind of data-driven treatment possibilities, right? So, you know, I'll say, in my experience, patients that went with this option generally have this success rate. These are the problems. These are the benefits. You give a pros and cons of the decision. Make it easy, right? Very simplified. But there is something very empowering for a patient to know that their treatment is their choice. And it helps reinforce that you're there for them, that you're part of their treatment team, that you're as invested in this as they are. Now, I have had some patients that have just come back to me and been like, Doc, I don't want the options. You're the doctor. You tell me what you think I should do. And in that situation, I will say, if it was me, I would choose this for these reasons, or if this was my mother or my father, whatever. But rarely does that happen. Most people are really appreciative that they're not having another visit with a physician who's telling them this is what you need to do. And then there's no choices given. Like, the patients don't like that anymore. They expected that way back in the day. Now people are pretty educated. They'll go online, they'll go look stuff up for themselves. So I even preface my treatment plan to discussions with people saying, you know, hey, I don't know how much of this you've already read online or how much education you've already done, but I'm going to give you my spiel on it. You just bear with me if I've already told you anything you know. And they're like, no, go ahead. Just tell me everything I need to know, because I don't know if what I've looked at is right or wrong. So people are looking for that information. They're looking for that empowerment. They've tried empowering themselves, but ultimately we need to put ourselves in the position of, hey, we are the experts on this. Here's your options, but I'm here for whatever you decide. And I think that is just such a powerful way for patients to walk out of that visit feeling like they've really, really got a plan in place. It's pretty amazing the difference that one makes. And step number 9, the final one, seems pretty obvious, but once you have gone through your treatment plan, you guys have decided on something, and you're about to end the visit, please make sure to ask if they have any questions. Now, your gauge on whether or not you've done a really good job explaining their condition in layman terms and explaining all the treatment options is going to be the number of questions they have at the end of the visit. That is your direct feedback on how you have done on the other two things. Most of the time, my patients will say, no, I think you answered everything. Great, right? You want your explanation to basically answer any questions they might have had. Rarely do I still get people that have a couple clarifying questions, but for the most part, none. And that's ideal. But you asked. And so many times I have patients that tell me, wow, thanks for asking, because so-and-so just ran out of the room after they saw me. Like, they obviously were running late and had somewhere else to be. It doesn't make patients feel like you value their time if you're rushing out of the room. I understand we get in a hurry. That does happen. There are ways around that without making patients, you know, feel that kind of pressure that you're under to keep on time. But taking the time to ask if they have any questions is a really important one. So please make sure that you do that. That's our 9 steps. That's it. Now, if I had to put together 3 overarching things to take away from this, first one would be human and relatable. Second one would be give patients options and empower them. And then the third one would be use terms that you would use for a non-medical family member in your explanation. Take that time. Generally, when physicians get really good at these things is when they find that their compliance rates go up and that word of mouth referral just skyrockets, which is honestly probably one of our biggest referral sources in private practice. Somebody who's really happy is going to send you every family member, team member, other person they know under the sun. So highly, highly recommend figuring out the best way to build some patient rapport. It's super important. I do hope this was really helpful for everybody in building their patient rapport. If you have further questions, please reach out to me, Dr. Sarah at visionarypracticesolutions.com. Otherwise, I hope to see you guys on the next VPS podcast.